Up next on Tech News Today, Google might be exiting its Nexus branding. Also, Facebook's trending news promotes false news after going all in on algorithms. Bad move, Facebook. How Amazon data could actually predict food recalls. Apple's got a $14.5 billion tax bill in Ireland. Ouch. And a new drone that'll fulfill your X-Wing dreams. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1588, recorded Tuesday, August 30th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now. Enter the promo code TNT for 30% off your entire order.
And by Trunk Club, get clothes that fit and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/TNT and join Trunk Club today.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. You can screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about technology. We are what I like to call the Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton of tech news.
I had no idea you liked to call us that. I just found that out just this second.
I just like to say something that might surprise you. But you don't know. What I'm going to say. And it's exciting. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. I spend all my time trying to avoid politics these days. I want to just hide under a rock and emerge and see what happened.
Well, you know what? You can avoid it for the next 45 minutes to an hour during this show.
Not if I'm Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. I can't. I've got to stand on the stump. I've got a stump right now. No, let's talk about technology instead, because I think that's what everyone actually wants to hear. Google's Nexus program first launched in 2009 with the Nexus One. It was meant to act not only as a reference for developers to design apps against and other things, but also to OEMs as an indicator of the priorities that Google sees for Android devices every year. With this year's expected announcement of not one but two Nexus devices made by HTC, Android Central says to expect a big shift in Google's strategy, namely that they simply won't be called Nexus anymore. And if that's true, then this is a pretty big deal because it's a major shift in strategy for Google's hardware ambitions. And I've been kind of feeling this for the last little while, that you really see Google kind of turning a corner with its approach to hardware, with its attitude towards the hardware that it actually creates in-house, in the sense that before there was always this fear and this discussion around, well, Google, you know, can't make something too good because then it's going to upset the, you know, partners that they have that are making Android great. I think maybe, and this kind of reaffirms that a little bit more in my mind, if it's true, that maybe Google just kind of feels like, all right, now let's just make a really great product and see if we can go toe-to-toe. And I think this is a good thing for their devices.
Do you think it's going to be called a Google phone? The Google phone?
That, like, I don't know. That's what the Nexus One was rumored to be called before we knew that it was that, you know, before we knew the terminology Nexus. It was, for like months leading up to that, the rumors were like the Google phone. So you kind of expected that at that time. And then we've all gotten so used to Nexus. But yeah, it sounds like they're kind of zeroing in on the marketing around this to be around the terminology that everyone knows, which is Google. So, you know, it would be a Google phone, I guess, to a certain degree. I just don't know if that's going to be the brand name that this will ship under.
So it's not going to have stock Android. What can you explain what that means to me?
Well, okay, so there's stock or vanilla Android is another term that you hear. And up until now, Nexus devices have shipped with pretty much what vanilla Android or stock Android is it's Android right out of the box without any over the top customizations. You know, Samsung has heavy kind of skinning and, you know, stuff with their UI that they put on top of the underlying Android functionality and interface and everything. Samsung puts their own on top. So does HTC to a certain degree. A lot of the companies making these phones and making their own UIs have kind of backed down from their heavily skinned approach and really kind of trimmed it down to more or less closer to the basics. Nexus is like the most basic. It's like, at least it has been historically, as close to the core of what Android was designed to be, with no extra fluff or no extra kind of, you know, UI additions or extra functionality. But Sundar Pichai has said very recently, I think it was either March or May, maybe it was May, that, you know, they're looking to differentiate the new, what we refer to now as Nexus devices, with extra features, maybe improvements to the UI or whatever. So it's a big difference. It's a big shift in how they're approaching these kind of in-house devices.
Got it.
Yeah.
So with the Nexus devices gone, can we call it this the Nexit?
Ooh, I like that. Boy, this... Yeah, that cuts a little too close to home, because since this is a political show today.
I know, I particular. Said we weren't getting political, and then I went ahead and
I like
that
it,
up.
Though. I like it. That's got to be in the title. I think it remains to be seen whether this is going to be seen as a good thing or not, because I think still when you get to the core of why true hardcore fans of Android like Nexus, it's because Google did approach this as like a reference design for designers to follow, you know, for hardware manufacturers to build around and kind of compare against and everything. If Google's stepping away from that reference design kind of history and going more in, let's just create a marketable phone, which it kind of sounds like that's probably part of what they're doing here. We'll see if that's a smart shift, and if developers, you know, are left kind of wondering, like, well, what do I do now? This might be good for a consumer, but is it good for what I need to use it for?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I also wanted to thank Chris Suma. He sent us this story, or she sent us this story to tnt@twit.tv. So if you have tips, we love to hear them. Send them on to us. So most days, we must sadly report that the algorithms, the robots, and the AI are winning. Not today, algorithms, not today. Today, the humans won. The Verge reports that Facebook is... We won today. The Verge reports that Facebook is mourning the loss of those Trending Topics editorial contractors that were summarily fired on Friday. On Sunday, a fake story about Megyn Kelly getting fired from Fox for secretly supporting Hillary Clinton. That made the Trending News Topics news list. Even though it was a complete fake, the story was not true at all, completely made up. Facebook left the story up until Monday morning. Then a viral video about a dog being reunited with its owner was categorized as a review of the new video game Watch Dogs 2. So these algorithms, they're not doing so well. So, you know, we predicted this on Friday. We said meatloaf news. You need humans.
This is prime example of meatloaf news right here. That's what we can actually call this sort of thing. It's categorized now as meatloaf news. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that didn't work out so well for them.
Not so far. And the fake news is interesting because they've sort of touted that their algorithm can tell what fake news is. Like, yeah. They've said that like if someone posts something that is a hoax or from The Onion, it will be pushed down further.
Yeah.
I guess maybe not from The Onion, but something that's just fake on purpose in order to fool you. They know that the algorithm knows that, but apparently this algorithm doesn't. Will Remus has a piece in Slate about that some of the sources say that the Trending News tool, the people that were working on it, say it was flawed and it should not have been released.
Yeah, Digiday actually interviewed one of the ex-Trending News employees because, you know, they were just laid off. They were just laid off, and then this happens over the weekend. So you have to imagine they have many stories to tell from the inside as the story has developed over the previous months. I have to imagine Facebook has some sort of clause with them to not talk about this stuff. But we're getting some of this information. This employee was of the opinion that Facebook might actually ultimately just get rid of the feature altogether. Now, that's his guess. That's his speculation. But based on the fact that, like, A, the algorithm isn't working, and B, it has the potential to continue to kind of keep Facebook in this discussion around, you know, being continually asked, is this a media feature? Is it journalism or is it a marketing feature tech product? It's like it doesn't know where it wants to sit, and people expect it's either one way or the other, and that's not making anybody happy. And, you know, why keep on a feature if it's just going to keep stirring up controversy like that?
Exactly. So these employees, I don't know what kind of deal they have after being fired. I mean, yeah. I know they got severance, but they were the ones that originally talked to Gizmodo, like while they were still employees. Right. I mean, which is why they might have gotten let go in the first place, because they said, you know, this is they talked to reporters, and then that was the big blow up of like, wait a minute, there are people choosing the trending news, because it's the term trending, which just automatically assumes like it's an algorithm. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yes, a person has to make the algorithm, but I think I don't know. I think they got in trouble with conservatives, and I don't think they've fixed it yet.
Yeah, it obviously doesn't seem like they have. Definitely, if you haven't read the DigiDay kind of interview, it's definitely very interesting, and talking just a lot about how, you know, there were moments when the sales team would request that, you know, their client could make the trending news, you know, and obviously in journalism, that answer is a big fat no. And Facebook, you know, to their credit, the answer was no there too, but this question would still come back if there was a topic was already trending, you know, the question of, well, can we also add this, you know, into there? And that's, again, where those lines between journalism and marketing feature end up getting blurred. Also, just the fact that this department inside Facebook, it was misunderstood, essentially. Facebook, you know, didn't know that a feature like this probably should operate pretty much autonomously, as opposed to having, you know, this kind of like technology kind of management over the stop, you know, over treating it like it was a feature, mm-hmm. to iterate and improve upon, as opposed to treating it like it's a journalism department where they are separate and far removed from the, you know, the people making decisions in Facebook, so that it can be, representative of what news needs to be in there.
Well, there's not been any talk here about Twitter, which also has trending topics and which are also sometimes bizarre and weird. And, you know, it's just like, oh, look at what's trending on Twitter. There's no context to it. It's just a hashtag. And it's like, you know, you don't. And sometimes it's trending because people are making it trend in order to make it trend.
In Twitter's case, I mean, it's not being presented as news. And maybe some of the changes that Facebook has made now, where they're not providing context around the things. And that's, you know, a big part of what the actual humans in this process were doing. They were writing these little blurbs and all that sort of stuff. In Twitter's case, I have to imagine it's pretty much just a aggregate, you know, what are the big hashtags that a lot of people happen to be using right now, and we surface those, as opposed to like taking that and painting it as like, this is representative of news. You know, that article that Facebook, you know, the two articles that Facebook was called out on over the weekend, that might not be seen, you know, in a similar lens with Twitter, because if what that is saying is people are sharing this with this hashtag, then that's accurate. But if in Facebook's case, that's saying, yes, people are sharing this and this is news, then that's the big difference. And, you know, I mean, making that kind of judgment that this is news, that, you know, that kind of confuses the situation, I suppose. Sonos had an announcement planned for today. And honestly, I was wondering if they might unveil their own brand of home assistant. But in reality, this actually makes a lot more sense. I wasn't entirely wrong. Sonos announced a partnership with Amazon to bring Alexa into the Sonos ecosystem. By doing so, users of an Amazon Echo can use their voice to control playlists, make volume adjustments on their Sonos system, for starters. Unfortunately, though, Sonos doesn't have a capable microphone. So actual Alexa functionality baked into the Sonos hardware, which I think would be pretty awesome, isn't possible at this time. I really wouldn't see that as very far-fetched at all somewhere down the line. But that wasn't the only announcement. They also announced a partnership with Spotify, so you can control Sonos from within the Spotify app. And I don't know. For Sonos users, I'm sure this is welcome functionality.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I have two. I have the Amazon Echo and I have the Echo Dot. Mm. And Well, I don't know that we've read that it was didn't exist, that they weren't, but I think they're just taking a break from that. It was discontinued, but I don't know. I haven't heard that, because they talked about this in some of the articles. Like Sonos talks about how you can use your Dot and connect it that way. So,
so
I don't know if it's discontinued.
Wondering if it's disconnected or discontinued.
I know, and Amazon's always weird about that. They'll just say, you know, it's going to come back someday. But so I have two, and if you set them off to go at the same time, if you ask them both the same thing, they will never be in sync. So it's really annoying. Especially if you're playing a podcast or a song, it's like they're just slightly out of sync. I mean, that's the promise of Sonos. That's the great thing about Sonos. It's in sync. You can be, you know, in your living room and then go into your den and it's playing, you know, you can listen to the same thing. So that would be good for this. But right now, like, it's just my DOT is connected to my Bluetooth speaker. I just have to turn on the Bluetooth speaker and it automatically connects. So I don't know what this is doing except for asking specifically to play to the speaker.
Right.
But right now, all I do is have to turn on the speaker. And I suppose I could leave the speaker on all the time, too, and I wouldn't have to do anything. So I don't know what this functionality is really bringing. And you couldn't listen to Spotify on your Sonos before? That's weird.
I guess not. Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird, too. Apparently, the Spotify feature releases in October. So if you have a Sonos, you're not going to have to wait too long for that. The Amazon feature, though, is going to be 2017. So you're going to have to wait a little bit for that. But
well, back in April, we told you about Drive AI, a mysterious startup that had applied for and received a license to test autonomous vehicles in California. Now the company has totally come out of stealth mode, as they're calling it. And it turns out they're not creating their own self-driving cars, but instead creating the brains of the robot car. And they're led by some big brain folks from Stanford's AI lab, who are kind of a big deal. So they've also hired someone from GM, which is great. So they're working on LiDAR and radar, which are, you know, the way that cars sense each other, plus deep learning software. And they want to solve the communications problem. So they want to be able to talk to humans so they don't, you know, run them over.
Yeah.
Once.
I also came across an article on The Atlantic, which is totally along these lines. It didn't have anything to do about drive.ai, but it made me realize, like, so often we're talking about how the interplay between humans and AI, but not in the sense of when you're a pedestrian walking down the street, how you read the vehicles that are on the road, whether you know and can judge now is a good time to cross because, you know, that car is coming. Like, just the sheer fact that in the world that we have right now as a pedestrian, we make a connection with the driver, with the person that's actually driving, to know that, okay, they see me, it's safe for me to cross. In a world where there are no drivers, suddenly as humans, we have to be, we have to trust the fact that this technology understands our intentions, understands our, you know, the things that we might just suddenly decide to do because everyone's human and we're very unpredictable. That's a huge challenge. It's basically gaining trust of the system. So, you know, like I say, get rid of pedestrians.
Yeah. No, I mean, if we all just wore sensors so they would know, you know, and especially we've talked about, like, who would the self-driving car kill? Like the old person or, you know, the pregnant woman or the person that has a degree or the person that just robbed a shopping center. If we could all just wear sensors that said whether we deserve to live or die, I think that would be the way to do it.
Oh, that sounds like a beautiful world to live in. User 2477 says it will not be a problem when we're all chipped.
Exactly.
At birth,
right.
A chip is inserted into our neck, like that's it.
Yeah. Like a Gattaca situation where it's like, you're going to turn out to be nothing, so, you know, that's what your chip says.
Yeah, in these, that sounds like a depressing future. In the Atlantic article, they actually ran this big test to kind of try and figure out how pedestrians, you know, interplay with self-driving vehicles. In one test, it involved a quote, driverless van. It looked like a driverless van. I don't believe that it actually was. With a large display on the outside that said walk or don't walk, and also displayed the miles per hour display, miles per hour reading. And that was basically so that the pedestrian, when walking, could actually decide at one point if it's safe to cross or not, because you don't have that kind of human-to-human interplay anymore. It's just machine versus human or whatever. And apparently most pedestrians totally ignored the information, just, you know, kind of settled in on legacy behavior. And they tested 35 different displays. None of them ended up being more effective than status quo. So maybe we don't have to worry about anything. Maybe, or I don't know if that proves that it's safe or unsafe, but it proves that we don't like change.
It's true.
And we're going to keep doing what we're conditioned to do, or that we need to be tethered to someone like we're a dog being walked on a leash, as this picture seems to show. Earlier this month, the Federal Communications Commission lost in the federal appeals court as it tried to block laws that would keep operators of municipal broadband from expanding their services outside of their originating territories. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler had hoped to broaden coverage in an attempt to bring a competitive landscape to rural regions, and that might be only, you know, those regions. The unfortunate fact is a lot of them are just served by subpar broadband. Well, today the FCC confirmed that it does not plan to pursue a new visit to the appeals court or even to potentially bring it up to the Supreme Court level. The FCC is going to back down in this case. They say that its resources are better spent elsewhere at this point. I don't know if that necessarily means that they're like giving up entirely, but in this particular battle, you know, this might just be a matter where they kind of back down on this, regroup, and attack it from a different angle at some point.
I realized that I promised at the beginning of the show that we wouldn't talk about politics, and everything is political. I mean, this is very complicated, and I would probably need a degree in economics to really explain the supply and demand and how this works. But, you know, from my non-degree in economics, it does not seem good for the rural people. Like, the New York Times has a story about a potato farm that was able to run their business because of this municipal broadband, and now they might not be able to anymore because they'll take it away. They'll have to shut down without it. And the commercial services are unwilling to go to some rural areas and give these people services. So I don't know. And, you know, not a lot of people are talking about this. This is like not big tech news today. And more people should, because there is a digital divide. And I mean, I understand like that there should be a free market. And that's what, you know, that's what the point that they're saying to the FCC, like, you shouldn't come in here and control this. Like, we should be able to do this on our own. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, there are people that don't have internet access and they can't run their businesses. They can't, you know, it's hard. I think it should be a right that people have wherever they live.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the question that it comes down to, right? Is internet access truly as important as other utilities, you know, should we accept that in our marketplace, we have internet options because internet is a very, you know, important core fact of life for a lot of people. Like you say, you know, careers are built around having good, true internet access, fast speeds, and hopefully not prohibitively expensive, which is kind of what you get in some of these rural areas. So should it be treated like a utility? Is it important enough to be factored into that? That's a part of what this, you know, what this was attempting to do, to allow for more competition and to kind of allow for, you know, better priced, higher performing bandwidth in these places that might otherwise have really, you know, crummy alternatives like satellite internet with lots of latency and low speeds and high cost. And, you know, that's unfair. Maybe someday we'll get there, but not right now, apparently.
Well, after the break, Amazon reviews might be able to help you choose your next TV, and they might just save your life. You can find out how after we take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. With advancements in technology, we have smart cars, smart phones, smart homes. Losing your possessions can still make you feel less than smart. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, computers, backpacks, bicycles, even pets in seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can easily attach it to your items via key loop or an adhesive. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so the battery lasts up to a year. And you can add laser-engraved messaging to each Tracker Bravo, like return pet info, or you can have it say Mac Break Weekly like this one does. You can get it custom printed with an image.
Your own image.
Right here.
I'm sure you could find our podcast art and get it custom printed with that if you wanted
to.
Yes,
with
whatever
image.
You can choose anything.
Mm-hmm. Your face, your dog could always look down and, yeah, and get it. Who knows? Pair Tracker to your iOS or your Android device. Find its precise location with a tap of a button. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. You can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. And if you lose your phone, you press the button on the tracker and your phone will ring even if it's on silent. Tracker Atlas works with your Tracker Bravo or third-party Bluetooth tracker to pinpoint your items on a customizable floor plan of your home. You can save time and energy by simply asking Tracker Atlas where the item is, and you'll instantly get an answer. No need to search. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map even if it's miles away. If you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. When another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you will receive a GPS update of where your item is located. So go to thetracker.com. Never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get 30% off your entire order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 30% off your entire Tracker order. We live in a time, a wonderful time, when there are vast stores of data about pretty much anything you can imagine. The insights researchers extract from that data can come from some unlikely sources. Researchers from the University of Washington's Data Science for Social Good program has developed a machine learning platform that uses Amazon reviews to predict food recalls. Joining us today to talk about this research is Claire McGrain from GeekWire. Welcome, Claire.
Hi, nice to be here.
Tell us a little bit about this project.
So basically the way the program works is the researchers were able to link up the database that the FDA keeps of recalled products and Amazon's database of products it sells. And then we're able to basically teach the program how to recognize recalled products reviews. So words that often come up in reviews of products that would be recalled are things like mold or vomit or this product made me sick, things like that. And the program is currently attempting to predict what products will be recalled based on the reviews that are actively being posted. And what they've done so far is basically try and get it towards that goal.
So why did they start it? Why did they start this program?
Well, it was actually inspired by a similar program at the UW's Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, which was trying to use Twitter data and Yelp reviews to basically do the same thing, but for restaurants. And that data is a lot more difficult to work with. So they decided to try and use Amazon reviews as a bit of an easier data set. And because the current recall process for food takes a very, very long time. Some of the products they looked at actually took up to a year before they were recalled. And in that time, people could be seriously sick. They could end up with kind of serious medical repercussions. Or in some cases, I don't know of any of the cases they looked at had this, but people often die from products that have gone bad and need to be recalled.
Wow, it kind of blows me away that it would take a year from the time where these reports are coming through to any sort of action. But I understand bureaucracy and all that. So I also understand the internet, and I know how people are. Lots of people have vendettas when it comes to the ability to, you know, drop comments into, you know, things like this. How is that accounted for?
That's interesting. I think basically what they're doing is trying to specifically look for terms that indicate not that someone just didn't like the product, but that there was actually something that made them sick. Mm. So they working with the text data was, I think, very difficult because it can be very complex. Like, it's very hard for a program to understand, oh, this person just didn't think the product was shipped well, and that's why they gave it a one-star review, versus this person ate the product and then threw up for 3 days, and that's why they gave it a bad review. So a lot of the program so far has been trying to pinpoint which words work well for predicting this and which words do not work well, and that's something they're still working out.
So to talk a little bit about, they had a problem with determining products that had been recalled versus products that hadn't been recalled. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So the way one of the research scientists explained it to me was, if you've got a huge data set, so Amazon has hundreds, thousands of products, but only a very, very small amount of them have been recalled, it's very easy for the product to learn what a non-recalled product looks like. So the program can easily say, oh, this review is typical of a product that hasn't been recalled because it's seen that kind of review many times. When it comes to products that have been recalled, just the volume of data is a lot smaller. So that was a bit of a difficulty for them. They're still working through that. And one of the ways they're trying to deal with that is possibly also expanding the data they're looking at into other sources like the previous program had used, like social media, Twitter, things like that.
So this was put together by the Data Science for Good program. Is that a summer program? Who is Data Science for Good?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting program that the UW runs. It was inspired by a similar program at the University of Chicago. And basically what this does is it brings together folks, largely researchers at the UW, who have an idea. So the kind of project lead and the lead data scientist for this program had this idea. They wanted to try and do this with Amazon Reviews. And the Data Science for Social Good program actually pairs those folks with students at all levels, from like PhD students to undergrads, who work on data science. So they'll basically come together and spend a really intense amount of time over one summer working to get kind of all the grunt work and the advanced work done on establishing these projects. And then many of them go on to be implemented afterwards. But the students who are involved do a lot of the work with getting it up off the ground.
So this hasn't been implemented yet. Is there any talk of partnering with Amazon with this?
Basically, the team has spoken to Washington State's Department of Health, to other organizations that might be interested in using it. And the thing that would be really useful for them would be like a dashboard that shows you real-time data of what's going on Amazon that day. So if for some reason there was a little flurry of reviews over the course of a week that all said, oh, this particular, you know, ice cream or whatever is showing signs of having mold in it, then they could immediately pull that product instead of having to kind of wait the months that would take for people to end up going to the hospital or have filing an official report. So to do that, the team would need to partner with Amazon. And they were pretty excited about that prospect. I think they were talking to some folks at Amazon but hadn't actually found the right folks to talk to. So they were working on making that connection.
Yeah, because this is, I mean, the reviews are all publicly available, I guess. But, I mean, if you can begin to imagine all of the data that Amazon has that isn't publicly available. But I don't know that they would, I mean, they probably keep it pretty close to the vest for, you know, competitive reasons.
Yeah, I'm sure. And there's always security reasons for keeping that private as well. And I think in a case like this, it would really depend on how much good could actually be accomplished. So if the team could demonstrate that this could actually save lives, and if they were able to work with Amazon and find a way to keep that data still private but available for them to use, I could see it going forward like that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Claire. Claire McGrane is a freelance radio reporter and produces a podcast through Odegaard Research and Writing Center at the University of Washington. Where's the best place for people to follow your work online?
Probably Twitter, which is just at Claire McGrane.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you very much. Have a nice one.
Talk to you soon. All right, R.T. Cragen from Brooklyn wrote us about our discussion last week regarding the lionfish Roomba, which is basically the robot that's designed to kill the invasive species of lionfish. He says, official types are always accusing the crackpots who obtain inappropriate pets of letting them go when they get to be too much trouble. But I am sure that's a falsehood. Crackpots with a tiger in a Harlem apartment will tell you how much they love their tiger or Burmese python or cougar. But wild pets don't love you back and will escape when they feel the need, unless they kill you first. I would expect that lionfish get to new locations because smugglers lose control of them, and the lack of predators and the fish's natural fecundity. Okay, that's a new word for me. Do the rest. I don't know if that's revealing too much when I say that I've never said fecundity out loud before. You know, if it were genuinely known that wild pets, especially snakes, always escape, maybe we could convince the fledgling crackpots looking for a pet to consider less wild pets like mutts or guppies. That's why I'm not going to get any of these pets that were listed here, because I don't want to die.
Fecundity, how many babies they have. How prolific in giving birth to more lionfish babies.
I'm going to add this to my list of words that I say every morning when I wake up so that I learn them. I don't actually have a list, but I'm going to start one now. And at the very top of it is fecundity.
Yeah, well, I think that he was specifically taking issue with the fact that I said that people flush their lionfish, which I was being facetious. Like, yeah. I don't know that fish, do they really make it through the flushing out into the world? Like,
I don't know.
Finding Nemo real? I don't know.
We've been fooled by Finding Nemo and Pixar, I think.
Kara says they don't make it out.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's a lot of processing that happens through there, too.
When Finding Nemo came out, my brother actually told me after I saw it, and I love that movie, and he's like, yeah, you know, it should really be called Grinding Nemo, because apparently there is, like, a lot of, I don't know, there's something that grinds stuff up, I guess, to help it.
So yeah, the water treatment process probably is not too kind to little goldfish that you flushed down the toilet. Oh, no, I'm sad. Apple is in a little bit of hot water in Ireland, but before we talk all about that with Christina Warren, let's take a minute to thank Trunk Club, the sponsor of this episode. And, you know, by the way, I'm wearing my Trunk Club pants today. Oh. They fit me very nicely.
They're nice. You guys have to trust me.
Yeah, I'm not going to stand up and show them off. I'm just going to sit here comfortably and wear them. Shopping is frustrating. You find yourself wandering from store to store only to find clothes that are ill-fitting or not what you're looking for. As a very tall person, I know this all too well. Now, thanks to Trunk Club, you can get clothes that look great and fit perfectly without ever stepping into a store again. With Trunk Club, you can easily upgrade your wardrobe with fall essentials like blazers. You need a new blazer, right? Button downs for men. Greg's shaking his head. He needs a new blazer. Sleeveless coats, sweater dresses for women. Whatever you need, they've got it. Just type in your measurements and share your style and spending preferences to connect with the right Trunk Club stylist, all for free. Your stylist is going to contact you by phone, email, or messenger to understand your unique look and learn more about what you're looking for and your fitting challenges and all that kind of stuff. Your stylist will select items for your trunk from over 80 top brands and will send a preview of clothes that may be a good fit for you. You'll review your trunk via email and make the edits before it's shipped right to your door. And then once you get that trunk, you have 5 days to try on the clothes, see what you like, see what you don't, keep what you like, more importantly, and send back the rest. Trunk Club is not a subscription service, and shipping is always free. Trunk Club is backed by Nordstrom, which means they have the highest standards in quality and customer service. Also, if you happen to live in Dallas, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, or DC, you can stop by one of the Trunk Club clubhouses to work with your stylist in person for free. Premium clothes, expert advice, no work. Thanks to your very own personal stylist at Trunk Club. Get started today at trunkclub.com/TNT. That's trunkclub.com/TNT. And we thank Trunk Club for their support. All right, an EU ruling came down on Apple today, sees the company owing Ireland around $14.5 billion in back taxes. No big deal. Joining us to talk about this is Christina Warren from Gizmodo. First of all, congratulations on your new gig.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's week two, so I'm still learning the lay of the land and everything, but it's exciting.
That's awesome. Well, you're still, obviously you're still pumping out great work and now at Gizmodo, and this is an excellent article. Tell us a little bit about what this ruling stems from exactly.
So basically, you know, the way that Ireland's tax structure has been set up for many years, lots of companies, not just Apple, Amazon is one of them, Google is one of them, I think Facebook, basically kind of treat it like a tax haven. And they have basically a way that allows companies to kind of funnel money into Ireland and then not pay significant tax rates on it. And what a lot of companies do is that they're able to book European revenue or revenue that even happens in countries outside of Europe, basically any place other than the United States, they're able to book that revenue and say that, you know, it was associated with Ireland and then pay a tax rate that they've agreed upon with the Irish government. Usually in exchange, they get a really low tax rate in exchange for building out lots of jobs and putting their headquarters there. So basically, you know, Apple's had this arrangement with Ireland for quite some time. I think, you know, their original agreement with them goes all the way back to 1991. But the European Commission basically said, the European Union Commission rather basically said, this isn't okay. And you owe them $14.5 billion.
Yeah. I mean, both Apple and Ireland have said that there was no wrongdoing yet.
Right.
Here we are.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
This is quite a turn of events if there was no wrongdoing along the way.
No, well, it's very interesting because Apple's like, we did nothing wrong. Ireland's like, Apple did nothing wrong. The U.S. government's like, they did nothing wrong. But the EU is like, no, you owe us money. And in on the face of it, you know, I'm not a tax expert, obviously, and I'm not a lawyer. But, you know, on its face of it, it does seem ridiculous that the rate of taxes that they've paid. But at the same time, you know, this is agreements that countries like Ireland have made in order to get infrastructure and jobs in their countries. So, it's sort of a weird scenario where everybody in this scenario is like out for themselves. Like everybody is completely self-interested. Like Apple and Ireland have their own self-interest at hearts. The EU obviously has its own interest at heart. The tax bill, the funniest part, like to me, is that even though it's obviously a huge amount of money, you know, Apple has over $200 billion in cash. So, you know, a $14.5 billion tax bill, that's significant, but that's basically what, about maybe 10% of their iPhone revenues for the year.
So do you think they're going to appeal?
Oh, yes. Apple has already said that they're going to appeal. Not only did they say they would appeal this morning, but then Apple released, Tim Cook wrote a very long, winded letter that's up on Apple.com, basically kind of outlining, saying, you know, we're doing everything right and kind of showing their history working with Ireland. Who knew that Apple was such a big, partner in Ireland, but they've got photos going all the way back. I mean, it's really a little bit ham-fisted, but if I'm going to be honest, but no, they're definitely appealing. I was reading, I think it was Bloomberg had a really good piece about like what the kind of an FAQ about what the process is going to be. And they said the appeal process could be 4 to 5 years, which to me says if you're Apple, I would take that $14.5 billion and put it in, you know, some sort of annuity or whatever. And I bet that by the time, you know, the appeal fruition, the interest that has been earned on
that's a really good point,
would probably pay whatever their tax bill ended up needing to be.
So, that's a really good point, man. Do that. So you also mentioned Facebook, you know, is involved in it. Well, yeah. Facebook's involved in a tax dispute with the IRS, has yep. significant operations in Ireland. I'm sure there are other major companies that are also doing this. Does this spell doom and gloom for them as well?
I mean, it could. Yeah. I mean, it certainly could. And I mean, I think that it all depends on what happens with the appeal. And obviously, Apple and Ireland are going to appeal. It's not clear to me, and I wasn't really able to find an answer to this in any of the readings. But one thing that could complicate this, obviously, would be, some of the things that might happen with the Brexit. So that becomes kind of an interesting thing too. I don't know.
So, I mean, what is, why is Ireland saying they did nothing wrong? Is it just that they're getting so many jobs from Apple and they want them to stay there?
Yeah, I think it's a big part of that. And because they've worked out these agreements, you know, to bring, it's not dissimilar to in the United States, we have states will do tax write-offs for companies to do movie productions. So like I'm originally from Atlanta, and the state of Georgia now makes a significant amount of money from its income on by bringing in film production crews. And so, you know, you watch The Walking Dead or you watch, you know, the Hunger Games films, they're actually filmed in Atlanta. And they do that because they get tax breaks. And you know, you used to see that happen in Canada and in some parts, other parts of North America too. I mean, I think it's about bringing in jobs. It's about creating infrastructure where it wouldn't exist otherwise. And I think the recognition too would be that even though they claim that this tax bill is this huge amount, because of the way things are kind of being funneled through, it's not as if Ireland, which is a very small country, has itself done enough revenue, you know, for Apple to be, you know, taxed on $14.5 billion. I don't think that's possible. It's mostly a kind of a factor, the fact that they've taken any money that's been earned in Europe and kind of, you know, said our European headquarters is in Ireland, and so this is where we pay our tax rate.
Cool. Well, I'm really looking forward to the next 4 or 5 years of following the incremental details that surround this case through the appeals process, once that even begins.
I think they should just pay them in iPhone 7s that no one buys.
Yeah.
Good strategy.
Yeah. I did the math, guys, and I figured out how many iPhones would cost, you know, to pay the tax bill. And at the average selling price of $595 per iPhone, which is what the last average selling price was, it would be $24.7 million. iPhones. So that would be the iPhone 7 is going to have a little bit higher ASP, but so we're maybe looking at, you know, like 22 million, maybe 21 million. So yeah,
that's everybody in Ireland gets an iPhone 7. You get an iPhone 7. You get an iPhone 7. excellent stuff. Christina Warren, it's great to have you back on. We haven't had you on in a while. So thanks for coming on. Congratulations again on the new gig. Tell people where they can follow all your work online.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter @film_girl, and you can find my writing at gizmodo.com.
Fantastic.
Take care, Christina.
Take care. Have a good
guys.
Night. Bye.
TNT's fan of the day today is Ed Riley on Twitter, who says, "Sitting on my porch, Pixel C, split screen, mandatory foot."
Oh, yeah. That foot is definitely mandatory. Hey, it's Pixel C with a split screen. I like that.
So yes, thanks E. Riley in the chat room. Ed, thank you for watching, and thanks for posting. If you want to show us how you watch or listen to TNT with or without your foot, you can record a video, take a picture, but not necessary. Take a picture and post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. Next, I've got two Star Wars stories. You can find out what they are after the break. But first, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting jobs in one place, that is not enough to find the candidate that you need to hire. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your jobs on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Just post once and watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. You can search by skills, location, work experience, and more. ZipRecruiter's advanced matching technology delivers the most relevant candidates based on your criteria. ZipRecruiter also offers optimized pages that will look great on any screen. You can add their unique mobile apply process for more visitors and more applicants. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can add multiple users to your account. So please find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses and is trusted by hundreds of Fortune 500 companies. More than 125 million candidate applications have been delivered. So whether you're hiring now or you plan to hire in the near future, check out their blog for recruiting tips and hiring resources. Right now, you can post jobs for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. ZipRecruiter is the fastest way to hire great people. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT, and we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. So I have a two-pack of Star Wars stories for you.
Yeah.
First, Mark Hamill has shaved his beard. He has. And Parrot has unveiled a drone that looks like an X-Wing fighter. Let's start with Hamill. He posted a video of himself shaving, or perhaps he's being shaved. I'm not sure.
When I watched this video, I was like, is that his own hand/arm? It was kind of freaking me out, because sometimes it would look like it, and then I was like, wait a minute, that looks very unnatural. I don't think it's his.
I don't think it is. Someone's doing either. I mean, unless it's like the Jedi way of shaving, I don't know. It also contains...
He used the Force to levitate a hand.
Yeah. To make it appear, yeah, someone else is. And then there's the puppet hand at the end. If you're not watching the video version of the show, please go watch the tweet at Hamill himself on Twitter. I also retweeted it, so you can find it at Megan Maroney. The second Star Wars story.
Yes.
Parrot has a new hybrid mini drone. It's not a Star Wars tie-in, but it really does look like an X-Wing fighter. It's $139, which is great for a mini drone if you're just getting started in droning. It has the power of a plane, but the ease of a quadricopter. That's different than a quadcopter. I need to ask Padre what the difference between a quadcopter and a quadricopter is, because I'm not sure. But it has autopilot and vertical takeoff.
That's cool.
And uses Bluetooth and ships with a gamepad.
Oh, look at that. Now you just need some lasers on the end.
And we just ordered some for review.
We did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're so lucky. I mean, you're reviewing it, so you're so lucky.
I'm going to review it on the screensavers as soon as it comes, because, you know, I'm doing it for you, people.
Yeah.
Not for me.
It's a tough, tough job.
Yeah. Also, the Parrot Mambo, it comes with a cannon and a grabber.
Okay, what is the grabber?
It grabs things.
Okay, but the cannon, so that's kind of like lasers, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm,
it shoots things, but maybe not in a way that if it connects with your eyeball, it makes you blind. So
no.
That's probably a good thing.
And the Mambo does not look like an X-Wing. It's fighter. It doesn't have any Star Wars connection at all.
That's a good price.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Christmas.
They're mini. They're small.
Yeah, I like it.
They're like a gateway drone.
I don't know if I want to get started in this whole drone industry. It's shady. They get you with the whatever this is.
Yeah, first one's $139.
Yes, that's how they get you in the door with the Mambo. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC. That's at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You leave us a short voicemail, though you never do. But if you want to, 260-TNT-SHOW, and you can find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney, and that's also where you can see Mark Hamill shaving.
Mm-hmm.
And the East Side Studio is live. We still have some sets to finish. Our set is not finished yet, but we're celebrating already. We're offering custom T-shirts, mugs, hoodies, stickers, and they all have the East Side logo on them. You can get yours at teespring.com/twit.
teespring.com/twit. Get a mug or a shirt or whatever.
The hoodies are nice.
Hoodie, yeah. I'm at Jason. I need a hoodie, so I might get one of those. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole. Thanks to Greg for the words on the screen, including putting his name on the screen. I'm very impressed, Greg. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Will we? Yes, we will.